Okay, so hopefully all of you pressed 1 and you are back with us. And now I'm going to go over the logistics for the call. So tonight's call is interactive, so we're going to be moving between presentation mode, where all of you will be muted, and Q&A mode, where you will have the opportunity to ask questions. When we move into Q&A mode, I will ask you to press *6 if you wish to continue to be muted. Otherwise, you will give me your names if you have a question, and if there's more than one person in the queue, I will establish an order. Once the order has been established, I'll let you know who's going to go first, and then the rest of you will press *6 again to mute until your name is called. I want to remind you, I will remind you at the time, so don't worry about it. But when you do get on the call, I want to remind you to introduce yourself, and when you speak, be as clear and concise as you can so we can get to as many questions as possible in the allotted time. And so now, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our featured speaker. But before I go into Richard's bio, I want you to know why I was so adamant about including this particular topic in the Guru Lab series. When we at Move the Crowd listen to the scores of entrepreneurs that we get to serve day in and day out, I can say without hesitation that the number one most pressing need across the board is more high leverage relationships, i.e. ones that lead to profitable opportunities and ones that increase our entrepreneurs' capacity to play in bigger arenas and produce world-class results. And so given that realization and that understanding, I asked Richard to lead this webinar tonight because he is a master when it comes to building and leveraging profitable relationships. As you will hear from his background, he's a numbers guy, which is not normally what goes hand in hand with being a people person, right? Or so we think. However, he's also an entrepreneur. And as an entrepreneur, he has built a branded reputation as a widely respected mover and shaker and a well-connected leader in his field and beyond. So now a little bit about Richard. Richard Levachin is a certified public accountant and certified global management accountant and is the managing partner of KBL LLP. Richard has over 25 years of accounting, auditing, business advisory services, and tax experience, working with both privately owned and publicly held entities in various industries, including financial services, media, entertainment, sports, real estate, oil and gas, not-for-profit technology, and professional services. His experiences also include expertise with SEC filings, initial public offerings, and compliance with regulatory bodies. He's written articles and conducted seminars on a wide range of business topics, and has done so for organizations including Black Enterprise and the Learning Annex, to name a few. He's a member of several organizations, including the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, the New York State Society of Certified Public Accountants, the National Association of Black Accountants, the Association of Latin Professionals in Finance and Accounting, and the United States Hispanic Advocacy Association. Richard is also the co-chairperson of EO 2030, an affiliate of the New York chapter of Entrepreneurs Organization, a dynamic global network of more than 9,000 business owners in over 40 countries, for which he has served as a board member. He is a past winner of the Network Journal's prestigious 40 Under 40 Award, and in 2009, Richard was admitted to the United States Hispanic Advocacy Association's 2009 National Business Council Fellows. Please help me give a warm Move the Crowd welcome to the one and only Sir Richard Levachin.
Hey, Ra, I appreciate that wonderful introduction. I'm sitting there listening to it, and I'm like, wow, that's a really hot guy. I need to get to know him as part of my platform for building profitable relationships. And I realized she was talking about me, so I don't know how that's going to work out, but I guess I'll figure it out after the session is over. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Building Profitable Relationships. Appreciate everybody taking time out of their evening, hopefully, we'll be able to give you some really great insights into how one builds profitable relationships, especially for entities that are just in that early stage. As Ross said earlier, it's all about relationships. I mean, you could have a great product, a great service, but if nobody knows about it, and you don't have a platform whereby people are going to find out about it, quite frankly, you're going to end up broke, and we don't want that. So we're going to talk today about the various things that one should do in terms of building profitable relationships. A lot of the stuff I'll be telling you about is just things that I've done throughout my career to build profitable relationships. Definition of profit is money. we're not talking emotional profit here. We're talking about money, cash flow, bankable dollars. That's the ultimate goal of having a profitable relationship. You need to remember this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. Profitable relationships do take time. But before you actually get into the whole building of profitable relationships, you kind of have to start off at the beginning. And the beginning is who are you? So you have to look to package yourself. So in essence, you have to prepare yourself to go to war. And part of preparing yourself to go to war is in packaging yourself, you have to develop an elevator speech and what we call a follow-through interaction. So in essence, what you need to do is you need to create a prepackaged elevator speech, which involves a 10-second introduction of who you are and your company. Example, when I meet somebody, I usually say, hi, my name is Richard Levy-Chin. I'm a managing partner of KBL LLP. We're a certified public accounting and advisory firm. You know, short, simple, and to the point. Then you also need to have a quick description of the services and your product offerings. So in essence, you need to sit down and kind of figure this all out ahead of time and practice it. So in terms of, aside from the 10-second introduction, you need to talk about your services and your product offerings. So for example, I'll say that we're a CPA firm with a primary focus on working with emerging businesses. And then you should have a 20 to 30 seconds on what differentiates you from your competition. So there are a gazillion CPA firms out there. So part of my overall interaction with somebody I'm just meeting is, you know that they're going to look at you like, oh, yeah, just another pointy-head CPA. But what is it that differentiates me from all the other pointy-head CPAs? And one of the things that we've kind of come up with is that most CPA firms, they tend to focus on the accounting, the bookkeeping, and the tax work that they do, financial statement preparation, as the end product. We tend to package ourselves whereby we put that on the back end. We look at that as being a byproduct of the relationship. And we differentiate ourselves from other firms in saying that a lot of companies tend to look at us for our strategic advice, and that we tend to position the financial statement, the accounting work, and the tax work as a byproduct. So what that looks like is, what differentiates us from other CPA firms is that people hire us for our brains, for our great strategic talents. A lot of other firms, they do great tax work, great accounting work, and so do we, but we tend to look at that as a byproduct of the relationship. That is the foundation for how we can provide you with great strategic advice to help you get to the next level. So that's the other thing you need. So the three things are, you need to have the first 10-second introduction as to who you are and the name of your company. Quick description of what your services are and or product offerings. And when I say quick description, if that turns into two sentences, then clearly you're not being very clear in terms of what you do or what you have to offer. And then you have to look at what differentiates you from your competition. And in that case, you can go to maybe a couple of sentences. So once you've got it all figured out, written up, and together, you need to practice it in front of a mirror. Practice it in front of people, and just kind of polish it up, because that's going to be your foundation. That's how you're going to be presenting yourself as you go forward. Your company will change, your service offerings will change, your differentiator will become more creative, but you need to continue to practice and work on that and make it concise. And the other thing you need to do as packaging yourself, you need to learn to be comfortable with what we call the flow conversation. Well, the flow conversation is a small talk that happens afterwards. So you need to be very comfortable with having real good small talk with people. Under the packaging yourself, and again, this is before you even get to go to war, you need to get your marketing materials together. So first order of business, you need to have a really cool logo, a logo which is sharp and distinctive and is representative of your industry. Need an email address with an original domain. So fred@yahoo.com or susan@gmail or tiffany@AOL, that doesn't cut it. You need to have an email address with a domain name that's somewhat representative of your company. Then you should have really great business cards, thick stock paper, strong lettering, professional finish. And it'd be nice if you can get some brochures. Now, let's be realistic. Most people, they get a brochure, they look at it, and they throw it in the garbage. So what you may want to consider doing is creating an electronic brochure that you can send to people after you meet with them. Creating an electronic brochure is a far cheaper way of creating a brochure than to create one and then print out 2,000 copies. The printing cost of 2,000 copies can be quite excessive. But you can get away with creating an electronic brochure that you can attach to an email for not a lot of money. Then you have to have a website. Website needs to be sharp and distinctive and representative of your industry. You need to include a picture and bio of you and your team, and you need to use professional-looking photos that have a uniform look. And when I say uniform look, you can't have, one picture of the person's looking ahead, and one when the picture's off to the side, and one's got a picture of trees in the background, and another one's got snow-capped mountains. You know, you need to have the backgrounds and everything be consistent. Don't need to hire a professional photographer to do that. You could use a relatively simple digital camera, and then a digital artist can kind of clean it up for you and make sure all the backgrounds are relatively consistent. And a good web designer can help you make the pictures look well and consistent. Consider using Facebook and a Twitter account as part of your overall marketing materials. And always have your business cards. Take them with you all the time. Take them to the bathroom. You never know who you're going to meet it there. Even on the weekends, you should have your business card. Even if you're on vacation, you never know when a piece of business is going to come your way. So we're still in the part of the conversation where we're talking about kind of packaging yourself and kind of getting yourself together. We talked about your elevator speech and follow-through interaction. We talked about the necessary marketing materials that you need to have in place to hand out, you know, how you should image yourself. Then you need to spend some time identifying what your ideal client is. So who is it you're trying to meet? Who is it you're ultimately trying to meet? Who's that one who's going to give you that check? First off, you should identify the industries that you want to service. Where are you best suited in the entertainment industry, real estate, construction, law? What is the industry that uses your service or product? Then you need to figure out the smallest client you want to work with. Smallest client may be somebody that makes $100,000. Could be somebody that makes $1 million. Then you need to figure out what the largest company you're willing to work with. And then the geographical locations you're willing to work in. And then also the various cultural nuances of the people you want to work with. So you may have a product that may only be applicable to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community. You may have a product that may be only applicable to the Jewish community or the Indian community, or may be applicable to all communities, but you really need to understand the cultural nuances caused by your product. All of this is important because one of the worst things you want to do is engage time talking to somebody who's not in your target market, who's not your ideal client, and you end up wasting a lot of time with a person like that. It's not a good use of your time. Then you have to create what's called a relationship bucket. Now, the relationship bucket is there's several different categories to what we call the relationship bucket. There's a target. Target is somebody who's a potential client. Again, just previously we talked about your ideal client. So target is somebody who's your potential client. The guy's going to write the check. Then we have what's called a strategic target. A strategic target is someone who is a source of potential clients. So for us, law firms are strategic targets because they have, as their client base, people who need accounts. Private equity firms are great strategic targets for us because they also have clients that need accounts. Membership organizations are another great strategic target for us because their members are businesses that could use our service. So you need to decide, you know, when you meet somebody, decide if they're while they may not be somebody who's interested in your business, but they may be a strategic target that's able to refer you business. The third relationship bucket category is what we call a bridge, which is someone that can connect you to a one-time opportunity. It could be somebody who runs a networking organization, who's the president of a networking organization, that can connect you to somebody who connects you to an opportunity. So, in essence, when you meet somebody, you need to decide, are they a target, which is a direct customer? Are they a strategic target, or someone who's a source of potential clients? Or are they a bridge to potential business for you? Then we have what we call the identification of relationship flow. So when you talk about relationship flow, it is what it says it is. It's a platform that causes relationships to just flow. So you can build your relationships one-on-one, or you can get involved with situations where you have a multiple amount of relationships coming at you all in one space. One of the ways that we look to create that is to join membership organizations. A lot of business organizations, like, for example, chambers of commerce, can be really good places to go because their members are business owners just like you, and those business owners may be looking for your service. So membership organizations is just a really great place to meet fellow entrepreneurs that can either A, be targets, which are potential clients, B, be strategic targets, who could be a source of potential business, or B, be a bridge that can connect you to someone that can put you in touch with an opportunity. Now, the thing about membership organizations, there are a lot of them out there, so you have to be very careful as to who you choose to spend your money with. First of all, some of the characteristics of a membership organization you should look at: membership organizations must have the potential to generate business. So if they're having events and they're doing online-type activities, if those activities aren't able to generate business for you, then you're just wasting your time. Again, we're here to generate profit. We're not here just because we have nothing better to do that day. So you really want to be to a membership organization that gives you the potential to generate business. The membership organization must also contain members that are your ideal clients. And you want to take the time to explore the possibility of membership for as long as you can without joining. So one of the things you want to do is that when you first become part of a membership organization, you have the opportunity to kind of come to a few events before you have to make a decision whether you want to join or not. You want to kind of extend that to you as long as possible. There's a good buddy of mine by the name of Corey Cuffer that I was trying to convinced to join an organization by the name of the Entrepreneurs Organization. And Corey came down, and I want to say for a period of about 6 to 9 months, he came to a bunch of meetings, he drank, he ate, he networked, he got some clients, and ultimately ended up getting the organization as a client, as a paying client. And after about 9 months, I said, you know, Corey, really? I mean, you've come in here, we fed you, you've drank, you've gotten clients, you got the organization a client. Don't you think that maybe it's a good time, now is a good time for you to stroke a check and become a member? So ultimately he ended up becoming a member, and you know, he's been doing well for a while, and he's going to become the chapter's president next year. Once you've decided to make that commitment to become a member, you need to evaluate the efficiency of your membership. And we recommend that you do an evaluation of the effectiveness of your membership anywhere for every 6 months, or at least 6 months. So what that evaluation looks like is things like, well, the answers to the following questions. Did I get any qualified leads? Did I get any business out of that? Because you're trying to determine if you want to make an investment going forward in this membership organization. Now, if you have a one-year membership, one of the best things to do is to make an initial evaluation after 6 months. to get a sense of, you know, am I going to want to continue this after the next 6 months? And then if the answer is kind of, sort of, maybe, then what you may want to think about is putting that organization on 6 months probation. So if they're a membership organization, a networking membership organization, you can say to them, listen, you know, I've been here for 6 months. Nothing's come out of this yet. I know I have another 6 months. What can we do? How can we work together to make the next 6 months such that it's profitable and it kind of works for me? So we really need to take a hard look at evaluating your membership organizations in a 6 to 9 to 12 month period of time, because over time you will be spending a decent amount of membership dues being part of all these organizations, and the worst thing would be to be part of a bunch of organizations and none of them are generating profit for you. Now, if you choose to be a permanent member of that organization, so if the organization is bearing fruit for you, then you need to kind of get yourself in a position of power. What that basically means is that just being a member is not that good enough. You need to get yourself on the board of directors, because a lot of the really solid decisions, that's where the real players are, is at the board level. So try to get yourself up on the board level, because what that does is it kind of gets you where the seat of power is, and you can really meet some very powerful and strong people at the board level. So, you know, so that's pretty much what we have to say about membership organizations. One of the key ways that I've kind of built my business is through networking events. And in picking an event, it has to have a couple of factors, not a lot. First of all, again, must have the potential to generate business. Anything you do must have the potential to generate business. And you need to also, in order to be able to do that, you need to see people in there that contain, it has to contain attendees that are your potential clients, that are your ideal clients. So we talked about, you know, what your ideal clients are and taking the time out to kind of sit down and write down who those are. Well, this is where this comes into play. When you work the room, you need to see that these ideal clients do exist. Again, you're not here just to have a good time. In terms of the other thing we want to talk about in terms of relationship flow, social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, those are all great sources of social media that can kind of get you some great relationship flow going on. Again, you know, the thing about this is that this is long term. You really can't expect to go to a networking event and, boom, get a piece of business first time out. You really can't expect to post something up on Facebook and, boom, get a piece of business going out. It takes time for people to know who you are, to foster these relationships. Then there's strategic relationships. Now, this is kind of one of the key areas that our firm kind of generates as business. So we have relationships with several law firms, financial planners, banks, private equity firms, and also larger competitors of ours that refer us a lot of business. Now, you said, wait a second, Richard, you said you go to your competitors for business? I said, yeah. Sometimes our larger competitors get engagements that are too small for them. So they look to us, look to us as a potential handoff point for those smaller engagements. Engagements that are small for them, but actually quite large and lucrative for us, and that we're happy to get. So in essence, what you need to kind of do is figure out who your strategic relationships are going to be with. So for example, we have a good source of business for us as law firms. However, we can't go out and have strategic relationships with 10 law firms. You need to, because the reality is at the end of the day, you can only have so much back and forth going. I mean, you have to understand something. If you have a strategic relationship with somebody that's going to send you business, at some point in time, you're going to have to send them business. It's got to be some quid pro quo. So, but the thing is that you don't have to send them one piece of business for every piece of business you get them. I mean, for me, if I had a strategic relationship with a law firm and I sent them 3 pieces of business and they sent me 1 for every 3 I sent, I'd be blissfully happy. So you need to, yeah, you know, in our business, we have relationships with a couple of law firms, but we've come to realize the most that each partner in the firm can have is maybe 2, tops 3 law firms, because there's only so much business that we can spread around. And the thing is that when we have these strategic relationships with law firms, it's law firms that are in different industries. So we may have a real estate law firm, we may have an SEC law firm, we may have an intellectual property rights law firm. And as those types of matters come into our firm, we refer it out over to them. And the other thing you need to know about these strategic relationships is that if you find yourself referring stuff out and nothing's coming back, it means you need to change your strategic relationship. At the end of the day, you need to understand it's about generating revenue. It's about building business. So if you're not generating business in a particular relationship situation, you kind of need to move on as quickly as possible. Also, one of the areas you may want to look at is organizations. And we talked about this a little bit. There are going to be times where you're asked to be a board member. And a lot of times, not-for-profits look for entrepreneurs to be the board members. Well, you have to ask yourself a question. Are you doing this because you're a nice person? Are you doing this because this is a social thing for you? Or it's just a business opportunity for you? It's important that you reconcile that in your head before you go into it. Because you want to be very clear as to why you're there. Because if you're there for business purposes, your business radar will be on, and you will be able to then identify and see the opportunities when they're there. However, if you're there on a personal level and the business opportunity shows up, there's a good chance you may miss it because your business radar may not be on. So before you go out and serve as a board member of an organization, be real clear as to your intention, as to why you're being a board member and what you want to get out of it. Other areas, golf. Golf is one way that people build profitable relationships. Personally, I'm not a golf player. Because the thing about golf is that you have to be able to play fairly well. You just can't just show up there and play poorly because it kind of reflects on you. That takes a tremendous amount of investment of time and money, and quite frankly, I don't have the time to master a golf game. The other thing about golf is that when you have that person, you pretty much are with them for 4 or 5 hours working. So basically you're spending 4 or 5 hours working on maybe one or two relationships. That's a tremendous amount of time to commit to work on one or two relationships. So you could end up blowing 6 hours out of your day chasing two relationships, where if you hadn't been playing golf, you may have been able to talk to 10 people. So the golf thing, my recommendation on that is that if you don't like it, you shouldn't do it. But if you love it and you're able to incorporate that into your networking and building profitable relationships, well, it could work out quite well for you. Other things, church is a great place to meet people. You shouldn't go to church just to create business relationships. But however, if a lot of people there, so you never know who you may meet in church. So that's a good place. And then there's social relationships. You just never know that a party you may go to on the weekend, a pool party, a barbecue, you may run into a piece of business. There have been many social functions when I just did not have my business hat on where an opportunity came up in front of me when I was looking, and I shifted into business mode and then was able to get the business. So it kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier. You always have your business cards because you never, ever know. So we, at this stage of the game, we kind of talked about packaging yourself, which we talked about getting your elevator speech together. We talked about, getting your as part of packaging yourself, we also talked about getting your marketing materials, which includes your logo, your email address, business cards, brochures, websites, your Facebook and your Twitter account. And we also talked about spending the time to identify what your ideal client is, the type of the industries that you want to look at, the smallest company you want to work with, the largest company you want to work with. And we talked about your relationship bucket, the three buckets: target, which someone who's a potential client; strategic target, someone who's a source of potential client. In our cases, it was law firms, private equity firms, financial planners. And a bridge, which is somebody that can connect you to a one-time opportunity. We talked about membership organizations and the best way to join membership organizations and the importance of evaluating the effectiveness of your membership in these organizations. We talked about networking events, and we talked about other ways of identification of relationship flow, social media, golf, board membership participation, and strategic relationships. So now we're ready to go to the dance, and we want to talk about what to do when you're at a networking or other events. So you're out of the networking event, you got your cards ready, you got your elevator speech down, you got your flow down, you know who you want to attract, who you want to meet. But how do you interact at the networking event? Well, first of all, you need to dress for the occasion. So when you go to a particular occasion, you need to know ahead of time, is this going to be corporate casual? Is this going to be one of those suit and tie deals? Is this going to be a black tie event? And again, I know I said it 5,000 times, but you need to bring your business cards. You always have your business cards on hand because, again, you never know. You also want to get there early. So if you've got a 7 o'clock event, kind of behooves you to get there at maybe 6:45. Gives you a chance to kind of feel the room out and just kind of get a sense of where everything is, where the bathroom is, which is important, where the drinks are, which is also important. But also, when you get there early, a lot of times you'll have a couple other people who got there early also. So it's an opportunity to kind of warm up, you know, work on your little networking flow and all the various things you're going to say. And then you never know. You may meet some people a little early so that you can network with the early birds. And who knows, maybe some opportunities may come out of that before the major crowd kind of comes in. But one of the things that we like to recommend is that people just kind of stand in a just get into the central place and just watch the people. Just get the flow of the type of people that are coming through, what their energy is like. And then try to determine by feeling the room if the event will be valuable. Now, here's the thing. If you're not feeling like the event's going to be valuable after 45 minutes, after being there 45 minutes an hour, you probably won't be feeling it ever. So one of the things you need to determine when you go to a networking event is this going to work out for me? And usually somewhere within the 45 minutes to an hour of being at an event, if you're really open, you'll have the answer to your question. And quite honestly, if you feel it's not going to work for you, then you really should just leave because you don't want to waste your energy and time on that. This is business. This is not personal. So it's about being in front of the right people. Not everyone. It's about quality of people that you're in front of, not quantity. You don't get points for speed dating here. You need to approach people that you feel maybe within your relationship bucket. So when you look across at somebody, ask yourself, is this a target? Is this a strategic target, or is this a bridge? Try to determine that as quickly as possible. And when you meet them, start to speak to them, qualify them as soon as possible. Qualify them to see if they fit into your relationship bucket. By asking them who they are and what they do politely. So you want them to go first always. You always wanted somebody else to go. You always wanted to hear their elevator speech. You want to hear their presentation. You want to hear what distinguishes them from everybody else. And then based upon that back and forth communication with them, you need to put them in the appropriate bucket. However, one of the things you want to do is that in networking, a lot of people, the mistake they make is they meet people and they're trying to figure out what they can get from that person. Well, the trick to networking that we find is you should try to look to be a helpful resource to people that you have an interest in having an ongoing relationship with. So once you've qualified somebody as somebody that you want to have an ongoing relationship with, you want to try to be as helpful as of a resource as possible, and we call it the obligation buckets, obligation points. And what obligation points are is when you are being a helpful resource to people. You build up these points, these obligation points, where at some point in time, you're so helpful to them that they hopefully feel. They need to feel obligated to be helpful to you also. Now, here's the hard part. If after you've engaged with this person, if they're not in a qualified bucket, if they're not a target, they're not a strategic target or a bridge, unfortunately, you need to disengage as quickly and politely as possible. And you know, you just need to, because a lot of times we get so caught up in being polite that we end up spending a whole bunch of time talking to somebody who's just is not going to be useful to us. Again, this is not about being a good person. This is business, and you kind of need to get that. However, when you disengage with somebody, you need to make sure you take their business card, because you never know. I mean, that person, you may have misread them. They may have some, down the road, they may have some sort of opportunity, and whether or not they chose to engage with you at a future time when they are a solid opportunity could be based upon how well you treated them and that first time you met them. Now, if you have somebody who's meet somebody and they're in a qualified bucket, go through your elevator speech, which we hope that you practice over and over again, the quick description of service, and all the other things that we talked about. However, do it based upon what the person told you about themselves. So, in essence, when you meet somebody and you have them go through their, elevator speech, and do their whole presentation, because they're telling you how to sell them, how to create a relationship with them, if they're the right person for you to be in relationship with them. They're telling you all this stuff. And if you feel that they're a qualified person, they fit in your qualified bucket, you need to do your what I call your spiel, that in a way that speaks to their listening. So if somebody is a lawyer and you feel that person is in your qualified bucket, that's somebody you want to know, you don't talk to them about basketball. You talk to them about law. You try to impress upon them your expertise in law. So when you're talking about what it is that sets you apart from everybody else, you talk about what sets you apart from everybody else as it relates to, you know, your work with law firms. Now, the thing is that you have to remember that there are other people in the room. So even though you may be speaking to somebody who's in a qualified bucket, there's a whole bunch of other people out there that you need to meet. So you need to limit your interactions with people such that you accomplish getting your message through to them, getting your message through to as many people in your qualified bucket as you can. So what we recommend is that you try to limit your interactions with people that are in your qualified bucket to anywhere from 7 to 10 minutes. Because here's the thing, networking events only last so long, hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours. There's only so many people that you can hit in the 2 hours and 3 hours that you're going to be there. So you really need to master the amount of time that you spend with somebody and try to keep it concise and to the point. If at the end of the 7 to 10 minutes you feel that you want to continue the conversation, it may be best to, at that time, kind of cut it off and determine topics that you can discuss with them in a follow-up meeting. And, you know, you want to have at least one benefit that you can provide them with. Either maybe you want them to work on, you want to refer your business over to them, or maybe a contact for them that could be useful, or some other information that you may be useful to them. And then take their card and ask them if it's okay to contact them to schedule a meeting to chat further. So once you've given them, had an interaction with them, and you've created a space where that you've come up with a topic that could be of interest for follow-up, you want to schedule a time for follow-up. Now, one of the things that we do is when we take the person's card, anything that we want to discuss with them in the follow-up or any important points, we write it on the back of the card. I don't write it on a separate pad. I write it on the back of the card, because when I look at that, when I get that card, I flip it over. All the information as to why I took this person's card will be on the back of the card. So it's a great resource in terms of storing information. And then just continue to work the room. Continue to work the room, meet people, you know, stay in that great relationship flow. And after you've exhausted all your relationship bucket possibilities, go home. Because once you've exhausted all those relationship bucket clients, the ideal person that you may or may not have met is probably not going to show up. The ideal client does not show up in the ninth inning. If anything, he or she shows up early in the evening, not late in the evening. So there is no late night, last inning heroics in networking. So had a great networking event, and you wake up the next day, So what is it? What is there to do? Well, this is where we call time for the follow-up. One of the things that you need to do is you need to create a structured database where you put all your contacts in. It could be Salesforce.com. It could be ACT. It could be Microsoft Office product, the Google Business Enterprise product. But you need to have a solid database where you have your contacts that's readily accessible to you, and preferably set up in such a way where it automatically ties into your phone, because you always need to have your contacts next to you. One of the things you do is that if you're so all that information needs to go into that database. So now you're getting ready to follow up with this person, but before you get on the phone and call them up or send them an email, you should take 5 minutes or so and do a little research on them. Google them, find out a little bit more on them, go to their website, find out what they have on their website, read their bios, get a little more background into their company. And it's best to call for an appointment, but don't wait longer than 3 days, because after 3 days they're not going to remember who the heck you are. And if you don't get them on the phone and send an email with a reminder of who you are, so you send them an email and write in the subject matter of the email a reason why they would want to talk to you. Put a reminder of who you are. Hi, you and I met at the black and white party. Why you want to meet with them. One of the things that we were talking about when we were at the party was your interest in kayaks. And you had said to me that we thought it would be good for us to talk further about your interest in kayaks and how we could be helpful to you in the kayak market. The value that you're going to bring to the meeting, and as it relates to kayaks, we're kayaks experts. You know, you'd love to see us. Put a link to your website so they could actually, in the email, click on the link and look at the website to find out more about you. And this would be a great time for you to attach your electronic brochure to the email. And then put some potential meeting dates in there. So after you've kind of told them who you are, reminded them who you are, what you chatted about, if you'd like to talk about it more, why you'd be a great person to talk to, and giving them a link to your website, give them some dates and times that you're available to meet. That way, what it does is it makes life easy for them. They can just look at their calendar, see they're available at particular dates, send you back an email, say, great seeing you. Are you available? I noticed you're available on October 5th. We'd love to see you. Let's get together then. Or if they have an assistant, they can forward it over to their assistant, and the assistant can schedule them the meeting for you. But make it easy for them. One of the mistakes people do is they'll say, when are you available to meet? No, you tell them when you're available to meet and have them respond back to you. If you get them on the phone, first order of business is remind them who you are, the interaction that you had with them in your seven minutes of magic, and what value you look to bring to the meeting, what value you look to bring to them to the meeting. And then get the appointment. And if you can connect them to a resource sometime before the appointment, that's a great thing. Connect them to a resource, maybe referring them to a membership organization that you're aware of, sending them an email with by the way, here's a great event that you may want to check out. Depending on how you feel about them, maybe even referring over a piece of business, that'll get their attention. So we've had an opportunity to talk about how to package yourself. We talked about identifying the ideal client, our relationship buckets. We talked about the identification of relationship flow, which are membership organizations, networking events, etc. How to interact at the when you go to a networking event, and the kind of follow up you should do after you've gotten the networking event. So now you've gotten the appointment and you're getting ready to go out and meet with them. But before meeting them, there's a couple of things that you kind of need to do. First
hey,
order
Richard,
of business.
Why don't we let's open it up and just see if maybe we have some questions. Could this be the moment maybe to just kind of check in and see if we've got
this
some questions?
This is an absolute great time to. Yes, this is a great time to do that.
You've laid out a lot of phenomenal information, so I want to make sure we just have an opportunity to check in and just see if folks have questions. So I'm going to open up into Q&A mode, and if you have a question for Richard, I'm going to ask you to speak your name so that I can get, you know, if there's more than one, I'll get you online and we'll establish a queue. And then for those of you who don't have a question for Richard and just want to continue to listen, you can hit star 6, which will allow you to remain muted. So again, I'm going to open us up into Q&A mode and see if I can get some folks who are interested in posing some questions. Hang on. Okay, so you want to hit star 6 to unmute yourself if you'd like to ask a question. And so, like I said, if there's more than one of you, we'll establish a line in order, and then we'll go through the line so that we can get your questions to Richard. So who's there? Is anybody on the line with a question?
This is Jay Love. I have a question.
Awesome.
Yes.
So I got Jay. Is there anybody else on the line with a question? Okay, Jay, go for it.
Okay, this is really helpful. Thank you so much, Richard. And my question is, what I need right now is financing, and I find it awkward to, like, knowing when to bring up the money conversation, because that's all I need right now in this stage of development with my entertainment properties. So my question to you is, when is it appropriate to bring up kind of the money conversation when you're at this stage of getting to know people?
Well, the thing is that the first order of business is that you have to be in the right place. So if you meet somebody who's a graphic artist, he's not going to be helpful to you in a money conversation. If you meet somebody that's in the venture capital world, you need to understand people out there that would write you a check to fund your entity, they're looking for deals. So you're what we call an ideal client for them, an ideal person for them, because, you know, they're looking for deals. So the minute that you say, well, I have a venture, right, you know, so they're looking for somebody to say the following thing to them: I have an entity, we're doing well, and we're looking for venture capital. So a guy with money that's looking to invest in a deal is looking for somebody to say those magic words. So the trick here is to identify people in the room that are looking to invest in companies. And they are not interested in where you went to school. They're not interested in where you bought your shoes. What they're interested in, what they're looking for, is people that are looking for investors. So when you identify somebody like that, within sentence 2 or 3, maybe even sentence 1, you can say to them, hi, I have a company, this is what we do, and the stage of the company that we're in right now is that we're looking for investors. So at that point in time, a potential investor is going to be interested in you. If the person's not interested in you, then you need to wrap that conversation up as quickly as possible and move on to the next person. So to the extent that you've identified your ideal client, you need to get that out there as soon as possible, no later than the third sentence.
Okay. Great.
And Rob, I this is Heather Box, and I have a question too. I was just muted.
Awesome. Okay, so Heather, Jay, you good? Answered your question?
Yes. Yes. Thank
awesome.
You.
Awesome. Yep. You're welcome. So Heather, all you?
All right. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for this, Richard. And so my question is. In a lot of the opportunities that I get for networking and stuff, it's somebody that's excited. A lot of times it's somebody who's a lot older than me that has brought me there to say, hey, this young woman is really passionate, blah, blah, blah. And she's doing really good work. And so the dynamic is usually really, the dynamic is usually like I'm the young one, and I'm the like eager, like do-gooder, you know. And so when I get introduced to somebody and on their tag at Rotary or something, it says like investment banker from blah blah blah, I just feel like, what am I ever, you know, what am I ever going to offer this person? When you say, you know, when you're listening in the conversation, think of something you can offer them. A lot of times it's like, I'm the only one in the room that has a social venture, and and mine is like a nonprofit social venture combo, and the rest of the room is like super hardcore business people. And so okay. I wonder if you have any advice for me on how to, like,
yep.
you know, navigate that situation.
Okay, so there's two things that this kind of speaks to. So the person you talked about that wants to introduce you around, that they're what's called a bridge, which is somebody that can connect you to a one-time opportunity. Now the thing is that if you have a relationship with a bridge and it's going to be an ongoing relationship, i.e., you have a relationship with somebody that's going to be introducing you around, you need to spend the time with them to teach them how to do your elevator speech. So they should be able to do your elevator speech. They should be able to tell the person in 10 seconds who you are, the name of your company, a quick description of your service and your product offerings, and in 20 to 30 seconds what differentiates you from the rest of your competition. In addition, you need to also train your bridge to identify the ideal client for you. So you need to say to them, listen, bridge, this is what my ideal client is. And because the thing is that if somebody is uproariously excited about introducing you to everybody, what they will do is they will introduce you to everybody, but if you don't train them properly, they'll get into, earlier we talked about the difference between quality and quantity. They'll get into the quantity game, and they'll introduce you to everybody without, and then introduce you to a lot of people that are just not within your target market. So you kind of
right.
need to train your bridge to do your presentation for you. Now, let me tell you something. There's something about meeting somebody where somebody introduces them to me, and the person making the introduction to bridge does a perfect elevator speech on that person and is able to identify what differentiates them from everybody else. It's very impressive to me when somebody else speaks, lauds that other person's praises. So you need to train your bridge. The other thing is
okay.
that you also need to train your bridge to only take you to events that serve you. A lot of times when we get a bridge, a mentor or somebody, we get so obligated that we feel obligated to say yes to every frigging event they want to take us to.
Right.
The only reason they may be taking you there is, they like you, love you, whatever. But they may be taking you there because they like you, love you, and they like your companionship without being mindful to the fact that the event may be of absolutely no use to you whatsoever and be a total waste of your time. So you need to have an honest conversation with your bridge in terms of taking them to putting you in situations that you're in front of your ideal client. Also, you need to be helpful to your bridge. You need to take your bridge to events that are useful to them also, because you got to do the quid pro quo.
Right.
Because at some point in time, if you're not doing the quid pro quo, after a while, the bridge is going to stop calling you because there's no basis for you to have a relationship with them. Any points of clarification you need on what I said?
No, that's really, really helpful.
Okay.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you, Heather, for that question. I was taking notes on that one, for sure. Is there anyone else out there that has a question before we go into the next phase? Question going once, going twice. Richard, there are a couple things that you touched that I would love to just underscore, and anything that you might want to say to them, say to these points before we sort of move into the next segment. So one of the things that I know about you and have admired about you forever is your ability to surround yourself with powerful movers and shakers. And so, sometimes we have a tendency to want to be with people who are, kind of like our peers. And how do people make that leap to begin to you know, sort of stretch to a place where they're willing and able to consistently be in rooms where they're surrounded by movers and shakers. Can you talk a little bit about that?
It's kind of like people, the thing about New York is that people tend to be far more helpful than the reputation of New Yorkers say we are. In order for you to be around somebody who's a mover and shaker, you need to remind that person of who they used to be. A lot of time when you become very successful, you miss the glory days. There's a story once of this guy who struggled and all of a sudden became became successful. And one day he was working 5 days a week, then he was working 4 days a week, and then he was kind of coming around the office and puttering around and, you know, was doing well. And despite the fact that he had become very successful, there was something missing, and what was missing was there's a part of him, he said he missed the hungry years where he didn't have anything. I think Billy Joel actually wrote a song on it. And people that have kind of made it, when they come across somebody that reminds them of them and what they used to be, it kind of takes them back to the good old days when life was simpler. I find that the good old days are always a lot better in your mind than in reality. You tend to forget about all the tough times. So in essence, the smart thing to do, and this is and watch this. Need to find somebody who looks like who you want to be in the future. Because when you find the person that looks like who you want to be in the future, their reaction is going to be, oh, wow, you remind me of who I used to be. And when you're around people that remind you of who they used to be, they become very helpful. And that's kind of how you create a relationship with a mover and a shaker. You find somebody who's who you are, who you want to be, the next person you want to be, the next iteration of who you want to be as an entrepreneur, and you kind of bring them back to that time when they were doing what you were doing, and then you ask them for their advice. People love to give advice, and that's kind of how you do it.
Great. There was another point you made about watching the room, which I would also love you to delve into, because there is something that happens in the dynamics of a room at events. What are the specific things that are important for people to watch for as they're gauging a room and evaluating whether or not there's potential business there?
You need to be able to, there's a famous saying from a movie, Jerry Maguire, called Show Me the Money. You need to smell the money in the room. You need to feel the money in the room. So many times you get to an event and everybody's just really, really nice, but there's no money in the room. You know, particularly for the young lady who's trying to raise capital for her company, to go to an event where there's no money in the room is an absolute waste of time. You might as well just go to Burger King and get a burger. It's an absolute waste of time. So you need to feel the room and just kind of feel people. Just be still and be quiet and just kind of look around and just take the room in and feel it and start to chart the course of who you're going to talk to, how you're going to work the room, what corners of the room seem to be more powerful, what little buckets of people seem to be that know each other. Because the thing is, if you go over to a conversation of four people that know each other, you have a better chance of having four powerful conversations than you would than going to one. Try to find the guy in the room that looks like he knows everybody. Because if he knows everybody and you start talking to him and he starts walking around, you just kind of walk around with him and he'll just kind of start introducing to you everybody. So those are the kind of dynamics that you're looking for when you go to a networking event.
Great. And then my last question, and then we'll resume is, you talked about membership organizations, and, you know, I'm going to say that as creative and cultural entrepreneurs, there isn't necessarily always a tendency to look at membership organizations, and in terms of sometimes the way the field can be structured, there may not be a lot of membership or network organizations that provide the kind of substantial opportunities are there places, so one, are there specific types of networking organizations that you would highly, or membership organizations that you would highly recommend? And then two, you know, do you just stay in your field, or do you recommend, you know, joining or engaging in membership organizations that may be from a different sector?
Well, the recommendations of the membership organizations are those that are specific to your industry. However, if you're looking to raise money, you need to go to venture capital type entities that look to fund companies in your industry. If you're looking for clients, you need to go to membership organizations that have as its members businesses that could potentially buy your service. So it's more a function of membership organizations that feed you and feed who you are as an entrepreneur and can feed your business, whether to feed it with venture capital, whether to feed it with business. Those are the two key areas you should look at. So there's no one umbrella place that you could go to. So, for example, there's an organization called the Manhattan Chamber of Commerce, a lot of small businesses. Well, for me, that's not a good source, a place that I would go to, because when you drill down and look at the people in there, the businesses tend to be a little bit small. Again, remember earlier on, I said to you, identification of ideal client. One of the areas you need to look at, what is the smallest company you're willing to work with? So if an organization has clients that are under that revenue level, then you shouldn't be there. However, if an organization has companies that are over your what you're able to handle, you shouldn't be there also. So it's more a function of how those organizations fits into your company's mission and what you're trying to accomplish, whether it's raising capital or getting clients, or maybe even you're trying to you know, maybe business is booming and you're trying to identify qualified people to come and work with you.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you so much. Okay, so let's dive back in. You all will go back into presentation mode. And Richard, you'll let's continue. Hang on. Okay, Richard, we're back in.
So we went to the networking event, met a bunch of cool people, contacted them, followed up, got the meeting. Now it's time to go into the final stage of building professional relationship, which is how to conduct yourself in a meeting. So there's a couple of different areas that we need to master in order to have a productive meeting with someone. One of the first things you need to do is before you go to the meeting, you need to expand your current research on that person. You need to identify additional ways you can be helpful. Again, you need to focus on what you can give somebody. You cannot focus on what you can take away from them. It's all about giving, and you need to be responsible about your giving. You need to give to get. So the other thing is that you should have the meeting at their offices. Why do you want to have the meeting at their offices? Well, you already know what your office looks like. You want to know what their office looks like. You want to know what their operations are like, and you want to get a feel of who they are. So you should go to their operations and see what their operations look like. Feel it out. You should arrive early. You want to arrive early so you can scope out the operations and get a feel for things. What kind of magazines they have on the coffee table, what kind of pictures they have on the wall. If there's a receptionist, spend time talking with her. Receptionists, they have a lot. They know a lot. They sit there. They answer the phone. They know the heck what's going on there. So if you can make really good friends with the receptionist, that would be a very smart thing to do. Particularly if you want a follow-up meeting, because if you create a relationship with her, she's the gatekeeper. She'll get you through and she'll put you on the person's calendar. I have plenty of relationships with people whereby the relationship is such that, yeah, I have a great relationship with the CEO of the company, but I also have a great relationship with their assistant. So I have relationships where I'll call the assistant and ask the assistant to put me on the person's calendar without even speaking to the CEO, and the relationship is so good, she'll just put me on the calendar and say, okay, Richard, just give me a quick one line on what you're talking about, and boom, and I have a meeting without as opposed to calling up the person and saying, hey, listen, you know, I want to get a hold of you, or calling up the receptionist and saying, hey, could you have James call me so for a meeting? I say, listen, Fred, I would like to, you know, how you doing? How's the kids? It was great seeing you the other day. Listen, could you put me on Jim's calendar? I just want to discuss blah, blah, blah with him. Sure, Rich, what dates are you available? Blah, blah, blah. That's it. So make friends with the relation, with the receptionist. Make friends with the person's personal assistant. They're going to be one of your best allies in terms of moving along that relationship. When you sit down with the person, ask a lot of questions. Ask a lot of questions and listen to the person as opposed to listening to the answers. So, I'm sorry, what did he just say? I said listen to the person as opposed to listening to the answers. So the difference between listening to someone and listening to someone is when you're listening is that somebody speaks and you're able to repeat back what they said because you were listening to them. Listening to someone is it's looking at their body language, looking at the changes in their facial expression, taking in the full experience of who they are. It's not just listening to the words that are coming out of their mouth. So just, you know, watching how they interact as they're speaking, watching how they interact as you are saying things, watching how they interact, how they're kind of trying to feel them out. You need to inject something about them or their company that you learned from your research or some experience that you had with a similar company. So you want to give them a sense of familiarity, that you're familiar with their company, and inject that into the conversation as soon as possible so they can see that you did your homework and you are interested in who they are. And listen to how they respond. Listen to what your feelings. See how you feel in terms of how they're interacting with you, how they make you feel when they speak. You have to remember, you're asking these questions to determine whether this is an appropriate relationship for you. And if so, what are the things that you need to say to them in order to convince them that you are a great relationship for them also? This is kind of like dating. When you're engaging with either a target, a strategic target, or a bridge, it's like dating. You're trying to decide if you like each other, if this is going to be a one-time thing, or you guys are going to see each other again. It's similar. So you're both feeling each other out, you know, and feel is the key word. You're feeling how you feel about them. And if you listen to them, they will tell you how to have a relationship with them. So if you keep asking questions and they keep answering your questions, they will tell you how to close them. They will tell you how the type of relationship they want to have with what comes out of their mouth and also with their body language. And then listen for that one thing that you can provide and only you can provide that nobody else can provide. And what we call that is the value add. So when we're going out to meet with a company, I spend a lot of time asking questions, and I keep listening. And I listen for the value add, for the one issue that person may be having that I have a unique solution for. I'm very, very patient. I take my time, and I wait for it to come because I know it's going to come. And if I keep asking the questions, he'll give me the clue. So you need to find the one thing, the area of connection that will connect both of you, and the one thing of value that you can provide to them that nobody else can. And listen to your own personal reactions and feelings to their behavior. Look at how your body's feeling. How do you feel in this interaction? Do you feel at home in their headquarters? Do you feel safe with them? Do you feel a level of integrity when you interact with them? Do you feel that if you did work for them, they would pay you? That's a very important thing. So you need to feel how you feel with that person. So it's very important that, you know, you do your research, and also before you get there, and also you interact with them from a place of feelings in terms of how you feel about the interaction, and just trying to get a sense of who they are and feel them inside of you. The other area we talk about is intimacy. Now, a lot of you may say, "Well, gee, intimacy. We're not. I know you use dating as an example, Richard. But again, this is a business transaction. This is a money transaction. You said that also." I says, "Yeah, but a money transaction is a is also is a relationship, and there's a level of intimacy that you want to have with that person. Now, I'm not talking about romantic intimacy or sexual intimacy. I'm talking about a certain level of intimacy from a business standpoint, and we kind of talk about that a little more. But the first order of business, again, goes back to asking questions and listening. Again, not listening to, but listening to answers. And, hey, do me a favor. Avoid the typical canned intimacy type stuff, like, so where'd you grow up, or so where'd you go to school, so how's the weather out there, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know what? That's nonsense. That's not real conversation. You know, you want to look for common areas that you both share and that you both can speak intimately and in detail about that is attached to the business. So what are the great areas of their business that's really cool and exciting that kind of turns you on that you know, you want to talk to them about? And then you have to give a little of yourself. You need to provide some intimate knowledge about yourself or your company or a client you may have worked on that has a similar situation to theirs. So give a little of some of yourself in the conversation. Once they've spent a considerable time talking about themselves and their company, then you talk about your company. So one of the biggest mistakes people make is they go into a presentation, they start bobbing away about their company and how we're the greatest thing, and so it was great meeting you at a networking event, and let me tell you who I am, and this is what I've done, this is how I've conquered the world. No, that's not the way you do it. The way you do it is to engage in a Q&A session with that person, and you want to find out who they are. And the reason why you want to find out who they are is so that you can structure how you engage with them based upon what they've told you about you and based upon the research that you've performed on them. So what you're trying to do is not give a cookie-cutter presentation to that person or a cookie-cutter interaction. You're trying to create a customized interaction with that person that's specific to who they are and who their needs are and their wants and dreams and hopes for life. So as a way of creating intimacy. And at that point in time, after, you know, they spent a lot of time talking about themselves, then you talk about your company, but again, present the firm in a way that speaks to their needs, that mirrors who they are. Now, you couldn't do that before because you simply didn't have the information to do that, but, you know, now you do. And keep it at a high level and keep it brief. Try to identify at least one opportunity or issue that you can help them with. At this point in time, you have enough information that you can start to be position yourself to be helpful. And present what the benefits of the opportunity looks like at the finish line. So if you feel that you can help their organization run better, or you can provide a great audit for them, or you can save them money on their taxes, or whatever, present the benefits of that, of being in a relationship with you. But don't tell them how to get there. Because if you get there, then if you tell them how to get there, you're giving away the shop, and they got to pay you to give away the shop. And then use examples. People love examples. People respond to real-life situations. So give them real examples of how you can be of benefit to them, clients that you work with. But don't tell them the name, you know, unless it's – try to avoid breaching any kind of confidentiality with current clients. And don't just listen to how people are responding to your interactions. Also listen to how you are feeling throughout the interaction. The relationship has to be a good fit for both sides in order for it to work. It can't just be they feel good about you, but you don't feel good about them. If you don't feel good about them, there's a reason why, and it's a clear signal that maybe you shouldn't engage. Again, these intimate feelings that you create, they need to be authentic. They can't be these canned-type business stuff. They really do need – the more authentic the relationship, the more long-lasting that is going to be. One thing you need to know about entrepreneurs, they love to talk about their companies. And they just love to talk about their companies. These are their babies. Assuming that they have good things to say, they tend to be in a good mood after talking about these good things. And who helped them get in that good mood? Well, you did. So the extent that you got them in that really great mood, you know, they feel good. They talked about the thing they loved. They talked about it to you, so they tend to associate the good mood with you, that you created that good mood. Now, if things aren't good, they're really anxious. If you really conducted the conversation well, then they need help. And to the extent that you can provide a solution, man, that's great. They're gonna want to hear your solution. But either way, they are open intimately and emotionally to receive what you have to say, assuming that you did a good job of listening to them. A couple other things to kind of just talk about, again, before we open the floor to any further questions. There's a concept of mirroring. And what mirroring is where you show the party that who you are is someone that mirrors who they are. People love the sound of their own names, and they also love people who are like they are. So to the extent that you can find that common area that you are like they are, that makes, and again, it has to be authentic. It can't just be made up. That's a great place to come from, the place that you guys mirror each other. Mirroring allows you to present yourself in ways that are aligned with those business matters that are important to them. And if you've done a great job of the research first, of feeling them out, of creating intimacy, then you know exactly how to mirror them to engage with you in a business relationship. So if you've done all your homework, you're able to mirror them in such a way where they, it's almost as if where they start, you finish, and then you, and it's kind of like the circular type flow of energy just going back and forth between you. You're like that missing piece that they've been looking for all their lives. You know, you try to do your best to mirror people's speech patterns. So if they speak fast, you need to speak fast. If they speak slow, you should speak slow. If they speak fast and you speak slow, they may think you're stupid. If you speak slow, if you're speaking slow and they're speaking fast, they probably think you're stupid because you can't keep up with them. But if they're speaking slow and you're speaking fast, they may take that as if you're trying to pull a fast one on them. Because if they speak slowly, they want somebody else to speak slowly because, you know, they're taking the time to explain something. They want you to take your time to explain your position. And if they're speaking very quickly, they want you to speak very quickly because what that whole process of mirroring them, it makes them feel like, you know, you're able to keep up with them. So it's very important that, you know, mirroring, the whole mirroring concept is very important. And you also need to act like, this is kind of tricky, you need to act like the person they want to be in a relationship. So you need to be the person they want to be in a relationship. But while doing that, you still have to be yourself. You still have to be authentic. Authenticity is key because at some point in time, if the relationship is moving along, it's kind of like dating. If you're acting a certain way, then all of a sudden, weeks later, you change your behavior. They're going to realize, wait a second, you really weren't who that person is that you said you were. You're somebody else. And then the whole thing is just kind of fall apart like a stack of cards. So, you know, the whole mirroring concept, it's very key in terms of how you interact with people, how you relate to people. But, you know, through all these various concepts, you have to be authentic in your interactions, because over time, if you're not authentic, it's just going to catch up to you and it's all going to fall apart. So, you've had this really fabulous meeting with them and things went well, and you walked out of there and you felt good and they felt good and life is beautiful. But the thing is that real business happens after the meeting. It doesn't happen during the meeting. And in order to get business to happen, and in order to generate a profitable relationship, you need to do follow-up. So one of the things that we recommend is that you create some sort of interactive follow-up platform. And what that looks like for us is e-blasts. So what we do is we've created these e-blasts, which are emails that go out on a variety of topics. It could be taxation. It could be about venture capital. It could be about growing your business. But it's accounting type stuff. And we send these e-blasts with useful information. And I want to highlight and underline and bold yellow useful information to, we send it out to our database on a regular basis, which is usually every 4 to 6 weeks. And what our marketing people have determined is that the best time to do it is Wednesday at 8 a.m. because they feel, based upon their research, and I wish I could tell you how they came up with that, but I quite honestly, I don't remember. Wednesday at 9 o'clock is at 8 o'clock is the magical time for IE blast to go out. And we've had situations, we had a situation once where we sent out an e-blast on QuickBooks and at 8 a.m. and by 5 o'clock we had 3 referrals. And we've had situations where we sent out an e-blast and the phone rang. It's like, oh, Richard, you know, I'm glad you sent me your e-blast because it just reminded me that I had an issue that I need to talk, that I do need to talk to you about. So the purpose of an e-blast is just to kind of jog people's memories and to keep you in front of them. Now, let's be real clear. You may not write the most brilliant piece of literature since the beginning of time, but nobody's has time to read your entire e-blast. The purpose of writing an e-blast is not to write this long thing, thinking that people are going to sit there and read, you know, taking a half an hour today to read the whole thing. It needs to be something that's clear and concise. However, you need to remember the purpose of an e-blast is to jog people's memory of who you are to possibly get them to call you. So, again, don't turn into William Shakespeare when writing your e-blast. Keep it concise and to the point and keep it useful and interesting. And just to jog people's memories. A lot of times, you know, we'll get emails after IE blast. Oh man, I'm glad you called. That was very interesting. Like to set up an appointment, grab some lunch, meet with you, talk to you about an opportunity. It's a very, very inexpensive way to kind of keep yourself in front of somebody. So as it relates to the follow-up, that's one way of keeping in contact with all the people that you meet during the course of your business lifetime. We had somebody in the e-blast for several years, and then after 3 or 4 years of him getting our e-blast, he finally calls me up on the phone and says, "Okay, Richard, it's been a while, but we're ready to go now. Let's have an appointment, and let's get you engaged, and let's move forward." If you get an invitation to an event that may be of interest to somebody, is of interest to you, pass the invitation along. So if you get an interesting invite, and you feel that it would fit certain people that you're trying to create a relationship with, pass it along. You know, a little note, "Hey, thought of you, saw this, thought of you, thought you'd be interested, hope you're well, take care, give me a call someday." The same thing with an interesting article. If you see an interesting article, pass it along. I mean, just kind of anything that's going to keep you in front of that person. Big one, refer business to somebody. You know, want to get my attention? Send me a piece of business. You send me a piece of business, trust me, I'm going to call you up. I'm going to want to follow up with you. I'm going to want to know what's going on with you. That's the best way to get my attention. Send me business. Make email introductions of people. If you come across somebody that could be useful to somebody, introduce them to your contact. However, you know, you need to ask both parties if it's okay for you to introduce them. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten an email from somebody saying, "Hey, Rich, I thought this, you know, I want to introduce you to Joe Blow. I thought it would be really good for you guys to meet. Here's his contact. Joe, meet Richard. You guys should connect, blah, blah, blah." And when I look at Joe's bio, I'm like, I don't want to meet this guy. This is no benefit to me. What really works for me is if you call me up and say, "Hey, I want to introduce you to Joe Blow. This is who Joe is. Would this be useful to you?" And I would like, "Yeah, that'd be useful to me. I appreciate you thinking of me." And then all of a sudden, you've now built up the obligation point. So now I feel obligated that you introduced me to this really cool contact. So I'm going to ask you, "So how are you doing? Maybe we should get together." You know, so this is another way of kind of doing it. And when you send the email introduction, be very specific. "I like to make an introduction. Fred, please meet Richard Levichin. He's a partner in the CPA firm. He's a good guy." You know, say something complimentary. "He's a good guy. I thought it would be good for you to connect. The area of interest that I thought that Richard could help you with is blah, 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 blah." And then, you know, "Richard, please meet Fred. He's got a great company." You know, be complimentary. Set it up for each person as to why it's a good meeting they should be talking to each other. And then call me for lunch or dinner. You know, call people for lunch or dinner occasionally. But only do that for important contacts. Taking people out that aren't important, it gets expensive real quick. So if somebody sent you a nice piece of business the least you can do is take them out for some lunch. So you got to be very selective who you do the dinner and the lunch thing with, because, you know, I see people out there, they're just taking people out to lunch all the time. But when you drill down and look at the people they're taking out to lunch, it's people that aren't really of great value. So you have to do the lunch and the dinner card on people that are of great value. If you're speaking at an event, send out invitations. You know, again, another cheap way of just kind of touching people. Hey, I'm going to be speaking at so-and-so. Thought this would be of interest with you. You know, hope to see you then. And then every so often, you know, schedule a catch-up call. Are you available for a catch-up call and you haven't spoken to you in a while? It'd be great to talk to you. And again, don't say, it'd be great to talk to you. Let me know when you're available. No. Say, I am available on the following dates and times. Let me know which one works best for you. Because what it does is sets it up for that person. They can send you back a one-liner. September 7th at 2 p.m. works. And then you send back, great, I'll call you then. And you're good to go, and they put an account, and it's good. So you just, it kind of makes it easy for you. So that's pretty much all I have to say about building profitable relationships.
Why don't we open it up for questions, maybe? Richard?
Yep.
You think so? Maybe we'll open it up. Again, you laid out a lot here, and I want to make sure that people have an opportunity to engage with the information. So, again, you all, we're going to go into Q&A mode, and you will press *6 and unmute yourself if you have a question. If you don't have a question, you can remain muted. And again, if there is more than one person, we'll establish an order, and then I will call you, and you can unmute and speak accordingly. So hang on for 2 seconds, and we'll come into Q&A mode. Okay, so do we have any questions for Richard in this round? All you need to do is press *6 to unmute yourself, and then say,
I have a question.
Make sure we get you.
Can you hear me? Is it Anurag? Anurag?
Yep, Anurag, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Anybody else out there unmuted that has a question? Okay, Anurag, go for it.
Hi, Richard. So I have this particular question about the e-blast that you talked about. I think it's a pretty good idea in terms of continuing to cultivate all the contacts you've built over time. But I'm a little, I guess I'm confused about the content of the types of materials, you know, I should be sending or, you know, startups should be sending to all these people. Just out of curiosity and maybe perhaps some concern about, you know, flooding their inboxes. So if you could speak to the content aspect of these and how long they should be in general, I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
So here's the thing. I could speak, you know, from my experience. So it goes back to the part of the presentation we talked about, the identification of ideal client. So in essence, you know, in that identification of ideal client, again, we're doing this because we're trying to get business. Let's just be real clear about that. So in the identification of the ideal client, we talked about what industries that you want to serve, the smallest company you want to work with, largest company, geographical location, cultural nuances. So we're a CPA firm. Our primary focus is dealing with emerging businesses, which are companies that are anywhere from that could start with zero revenue and all the way up. And, you know, if we have a zero revenue client, we want somebody that zero revenue client that's a startup is supported with some equity. That's our target market. So the question is, if my floor is a zero revenue company with private equity, and my ceiling is for example a $200 million company that's mature, what is the conversation that they both would be interested in hearing about? Now. It's asking a lot for you to always again, if you're sending out an e-blast every 4 to 6 weeks, the bad news is that you're not gonna make everybody excited with your content. Some days you're just gonna absolutely miss it, and some days you're gonna hit it. However, again, you need to remember you're just trying to nudge that. If the only thing you did was nudge that person and create a memory of you, sometimes that's enough to jog their memory. Oh, man, I remember him. I need to call him. So we've had people call me, and they were very honest. Richard, I got your e-blast, but I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't read it. However,
yeah.
You know, it just reminded me to call you. However, that doesn't mean that you just write crap and send it out just to get your name in front of people. You need to be responsible. So, again, let me go back to my target market and drill down my experience again just to remind. So our target market is companies with zero revenue that have equity capital, and then companies that could be up to $200 million or that are mature and everything in between. So some of the content that we – some of the topics that we've sent out, we sent out an e-blast on the taxability of frequent flyer miles, reward points, cell phones.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, somebody's seen that, wait a second, frequent flyer miles are taxable? Maybe I should read that. We had sent out another e-blast, how Obamacare will increase small businesses' operating costs. Another e-blast was, so what happens if the Bush tax cuts don't extend beyond this year? One of the more successful campaigns was we sent out a thing about QuickBooks, a quick guide to QuickBooks. It was like 12 bullet points and real cool things about QuickBooks. We got like 4 calls on that. We sent out stuff on crowdfunding, which is, you know, a company that's looking for equity capital, they're going to want to hear about crowdfunding. We're going to be sending something out called the 10 Commandments of Being a Successful Entrepreneur. So those are some of the things that we send out that just kind of hits our target market, just really cool topics that kind of just hits our target market. And how we come up with our topics is we read a lot, and then we come up with a topic that's really, really cool. Like, oh, that's interesting. That could be really useful for our clients. And then what we do is we have somebody do research around a topic and put together an article for us, and then we just blast it out.
Great.
So the bottom line is that just try to, you know, you got to know your target market, know that what would interest them. Don't stay up all night trying to figure out topics. Let the topics come to you. Read a lot. When you see something that's would be of interest, that's a topic that you would want to write about.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Richard, you also, you know, this point about length, anything you want to say about how long or short?
For example, the QuickBooks article, it was like 12 quick bullet points. Because I'm crystal clear that people have got better things to do than read the crap I write. So we try to keep it to, you know, bullet points are a great way of getting people to read stuff. A page is, you know, something that's a page long, where you just kind of drill down to the important aspects. You're not trying to come across as the overall expert. You're not trying to give away the shop. You're trying to get the person to call you. So to the extent that you write an e-blast that leaves areas of questions, that's great, because who are they going to call and ask the questions? You know, so you, from a length standpoint, it's a little bit more than foreplay, but you know, just don't give away the shop. That's my advice on it. Just stay brief, concise, to the point.
Great, thank you. So, are there any other questions? If so, you can press *6 and unmute yourself and ask a question. Okay. Well, I'm going to ask one more question, Richard, before you sort of go into recap. In these sort of four qualities or four aspects that you went through in the meeting, you know, this research, feelings, intimacy, mirroring, you know, I think about sort of the times that I've been in conversations with someone, and, you know, the surface of it is very nice, but there's something underneath that's not quite lining up. And I know that for myself, you know, I might say, oh, give the benefit of the doubt. Or, you know, what do you do when you say, you know, you talked about how you feel into a conversation and how you feel into a person and get a sense of a person. Do, you know, to what degree do you give that sort of that benefit of the doubt or that sort of that room in the initial meeting versus when you sort of make a decision like, this is not going to, you know, I don't know. There's something about this energetically that's not lining up. The conversation all sounds great on the surface, but there's something underneath. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, the trick is that when something's off, the one of the best ways of dealing with it is to ask the person how they feel. You know, so I mean, how are you feeling relative to what you may want to do is inject a point. So let's say things are kind of just not feeling great or whatever, or it's okay, it's feeling a little canned. You may say, well, you may ask, let me tell you something. What is your, in terms of running your business, what is your biggest fear in terms of running? In other words, what you need to do is you need to inject a question that's going to create an intimate response. I mean, what is your biggest? So one, a great question is, what is your biggest fear in terms of running your business, or you know, what has been your most challenging? What is your most recent challenging situation that you've experienced, and how did you get through it? Who's your most difficult client? You know, have you ever thought about just going out and getting a job? Just something like that that's gonna elicit an emotional response. You need to kind of get in there, just kind of dig in a little bit more. And sometimes it's not even a question that you really care less about the answer. You're just trying to change the energy, change the mood, so that you can then come back and be intimate with that person. Because at the end of the day, it's about intimacy. And people, you know, a lot of times getting that intimate thing going, it could take a little extra effort on your part. So what you need to do is just inject some sort of intimate question, kind of dig in there, to just kind of. You get that emotional nudge in the ribs.
Thank you. So, final thoughts, Richard? Final comments?
Look, if I had to give an overall summary on all this stuff and kind of give you guys a guide as to what would be a good platform in terms of building relationships, what would be a feels like, or what's it kind of? What does it kind of feel like? An analogous type situation. Think of it as like dating. When you're first going out with somebody, people tend to, you know, you're feeling the person out while at the same time putting your best foot forward because you're trying to get them to like you. While at the same time, you're trying to see if you like them, and everybody, there's this energy flow trying to see if we, are you the guy I'm going to marry, are you the woman I'm going to marry, or should I cut bait and run now? You know, so it's kind of the same thing in terms of this building profitable relationships. Now, keep in mind the word we're using is profitable relationships, which is different than building relationships. So the relationship that you have with the elevator operator in your building, it ain't profitable, so you don't have to go through all this stuff in terms of building a relationship with them. But if you want a relationship to be profitable, there has to be a certain level of intimacy there. So it's important that you, if you think of it as if you're dating the person, you're feeling them out and you're trying to find a connection, or if you sense that there's a lack of connection, like, so if you're in the middle of a date with somebody and all of a sudden a red flag goes up, all of a sudden what happens to a lot of people, they start to say, well, you know what, I think I need to shut this one down. So it's the same thing. So think about dating as a guide in terms of how you should kind of approach your profitable relationships. And keep in mind that it's about creating profitable relationships. It's not about, you know, you may turn around and decide, well, you know what, I don't want to have a profitable relationship with you. I just want us to be friends, which is perfectly fine and acceptable. But know where you are, which side of the tracks you're on.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So I know that I took a lot of notes tonight, and hopefully you all did as well and you got value. Just a little bit about the True Paid Gig Academy, which the Guru Lab series is a part of. For those of you who are listening who are new to our extended community, I know we have a few folks out there who are new to our Move the Crowd community. So our True Paid Gig Academy is the nation's premier entrepreneurial training program dedicated to aligning your business goals with your heart's passion and life's purpose. And it is for emerging and established entrepreneurs who know they want to be engaged in a comprehensive structure with multifaceted engagement and ongoing support that produces tangible, profitable results. It is a 12-month program, and in the program you receive private one-on-one coaching sessions, a completely customized curriculum to meet your unique needs, and support for world-class business leaders like Richard, and so much more. So we just want you to know that registration for our September cycle has been extended to October 15th, and it has to do with a large group of folks we've had respond and submit applications for this year's cycle. So as a part of participating in this call and our intro webinars, which we've been holding this month, we've said anybody that comes in during the month of September, we're going to allow to continue to be engaged and evaluated as a potential prospect for the Academy if you know it's something that you want to pursue. If you got value from today and you want to know more about how to make your personal passion profitable, you can go to our website, which is movethecrowd.me. That's M as in Mary, E as in Eric, /academy. Or you can email us at hello@movethecrowd.me, and we'll send you an application and set up the opportunity to do a consultation. Last but not least, we want to offer you a final gift in honor of your participation tonight. So as a result of participating on tonight's call, you get to receive a free annual subscription to our entrepreneurial tip tweet, which is called The Daily Move. And you get one, what we call one a day, sort of that one a day vitamin motivational boost in your Twitter feed every day. And so you'll get a link and a follow-up email coming out of our conversation tonight, and you get to sign up, and then you're in and you're off to the races. So I want to just now, in Move the Crowd fashion, give us an opportunity to just acknowledge Richard for everything that he's offered up tonight in terms of his time and his energy and his information. So a lot of years of networking and engaging people from all kinds of backgrounds and perspectives. And I just want to personally thank you, Richard, on behalf of Move the Crowd, for spending this time with us tonight. And I just want to open up the lines for people who have questions, where you felt like you got beneficial information in terms of what he shared, to just give you an opportunity in whatever way you'd like to acknowledge him. So I'm going to open up the lines, and all you need to do is hit *6 to unmute yourself, and you can acknowledge Richard. Okay, the lines are open. Anyone want to acknowledge or thank Richard? Here's your opportunity. Let's try this mode. I think I had everyone muted. So again, if there's anyone who would like to just acknowledge or thank Richard for this tonight's session, please feel free to do so. You can hit *6 and unmute yourself.
Hello, this is Anurag. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you now. Sorry about that, guys.
No worries. Hi, Richard. This was really helpful. Thank you so much for this presentation. I definitely took very exhaustive notes and I'm grateful to the Academy for having this session, so thank you. And I'll be coming back to these notes time and time again, I'm pretty sure. Thanks.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Richard. It was fantastic, very thorough. I much appreciated it.
Thank you.
So, Richard, thank you again so much. And for those of you out there, we also want to remind you to stay tuned for the next Guru Lab, which is going to be on Thursday, October 18th. And it's going to focus on negotiation. And it's going to be led by Richard's good buddy, negotiation guru, Corey Kupfer. Mr. Court the organization long before he joins it. But Corey is truly a master negotiation, and we have done this particular Guru Lab for, you know, three consecutive cycles because it is actually our most popular one and most highly regarded lab in the series in terms of, you know, again, sort of frontline, real, practical information and insights that support you in being able to be really effective in negotiating and achieving genuine, as Corey would say, genuine win-win scenarios. So we hope you'll join us for October 18th. On behalf of all of us at Move the Crowd, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight and have a phenomenal evening. And until we meet again, stay true, get paid, and do good. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.